It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if they're special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Merry Christmas to each and every one of you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. You're treasured and you're valued. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. We've got some very special shows planned for you for this Christmas week, and I do appreciate you tuning in. I also like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. For all of your support and your good work as we are looking towards Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and the celebration of the birth of the Savior of the world. There is a lot to be grateful for, even though we have so many challenges that are going on right now in America. Producer Steve.
Yeah, like I think we made reference to yesterday, the stellar year that we've just gone through. Can you think back to a year ago at this time?
Would you have ever dreamed it?
Well, there might have been, if you're really news junkie, you might have been hearing about some virus that was out there. But who would have thought?
Who would have thought what has happened? But we have a lot of blessings, and we do need to continue to get our brains around these important issues. That's why we do this show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Today, in segments 2, 3, and 4, our guest is Dr. Alan Gelzo. He's a professor at Princeton, and he has done a series of courses for the great courses, The American Mind. And producer Steve, I cannot wait to talk with him about that.
Well, we detailed the week yesterday, and we talked about Alan Gelzo, and also at the end of the week, his name just escaped.
Oh, Bill Fetter.
Bill Fetter. I put these two guys on the same shelf with their ability to reach back into our history and bring it forward, help us to understand what's going on today.
And the recaps and podcasts of all these shows can be found at my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. So there's all kinds of great information there. Our quote for today, Steve, this is, I think, so important. Frederick Douglass was an American social reformer, an abolitionist, an orator, a writer, and a statesman. He escaped slavery in Maryland and became a national leader of the abolitionist movement in Massachusetts and New York, becoming famous for his oratory and incisive anti-slavery writings. And he was born, they're not sure exactly, but in 1818 approximately, and he died in 1895. And he really is truly a great American. And this is what he said, Steve. He said, "Liberty is meaningless where the right to utter one's thoughts and opinions has ceased to exist. That of all rights is the dread of tyrants. It is the right which they first of all strike down. They know its power. Thrones, dominions, principalities, and powers founded in justice, in injustice and wrong are sure to tremble if men are allowed to reason. Equally clear is the right to hear." Hold on, I got lost that on my computer. "To suppress free speech is a double wrong. It violates the rights of the hearer as well as those of the speaker." Steve, do you remember as there was this movement, in polite company, one does not talk about politics or religion. What I found, though, those that were pushing that forward were talking about politics and religion, and they were actually shuttering our voice. And I thought that was very interesting. What he said is that liberty is meaningless where the right to utter one's thoughts and opinions has ceased to exist. We're seeing a lot of that right now, Steve.
The opposition to thought, yes, you're right on. And I'm thinking as you're reading the quote from Frederick Douglass, obviously Martin Luther King studied Frederick Douglass, because that first phrase, isn't that the whole mindset of King when he said, not to be judged on the color of your skin, but the context of your character?
Well, and who set the stage for Frederick Douglass was the vision of the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And within that liberty, as you're just mentioning, it is the freedom to be able to think and to share your opinion and to speak. That is inherent in this American idea. And I can't wait to talk to Dr. Alan Gelzo about the American mind. I hadn't really thought about it until I was starting to do some research for these shows. Is there something unique about the American mind or about the American idea? And there is, Steve.
You can see through the glass I'm chuckling here. The state of the American mind, oh my. Because today is obviously not the what it was 50, 60 years ago. There's something happening. And, you know, the opposition of thought or the suppression of thought through the Black Lives Matter people, the Antifa squads that are out there causing so much trouble, as we've seen over the past year, it is so contrary to, you know, what we're about.
And they are trying to tap down our thoughts and our opinions and our speech. We've been here before, and we've gotten through it, and that is why we need to engage in this battle of ideas that is raging in America today. We have something unique and special that has been passed on to us, and we need to make sure that we take care of it, preserve it, and pass it on to the next generation, Steve.
Was it Orwell's book, 1984, where he dubbed thought police or gave...
Yes, I think that was.
We talked about that for how many decades? And, well, that'll never happen. And yet, you know, because we're so progressive, we're so, there and I use that word.
Progressive, actually regressive, but yeah, go ahead.
But, that could never happen. And this year, out of nowhere, the thought police are here.
Yes, but I am grateful that the veil, the mask is off on what has been percolating really since the 60s, really going back to Woodrow Wilson, which is over 100 years ago. And we now understand what is happening, and we need to engage in this battle of ideas. That's why we do this show. And you'll want to stay tuned for Dr. Alan Gelzo in the next three segments. Before we do that, though, great partner of mine is Hooters Restaurants, located right here in the metro area. They have five locations: Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. And while you're getting together with friends and family this week, let Hooters do the cooking. They have all kinds of to-go specials. So go to HootersColorado.com for more information. That's HootersColorado.com. And we'll be right back with Dr. Alan Gelzo.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.
Oh, there's no place like home for the holiday.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts and our most recent op-ed. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I am thrilled to have on the line with me Dr. Alan Gelzo. We've had him on before. I know that you really enjoy his perspective on things. He's the senior research scholar, the Council of the Humanities director, the Initiative on Politics and Statesmanship, the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. Dr. Alan Gelzo, Merry Christmas and welcome to the show.
And Merry Christmas to you, Kim, and it's fun to be back.
It is great to have you back. Wanted to talk about some big ideas with all that is going on in America today. I noticed that you had done a course for the great courses, I believe, in the American mind. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, as a historian, my fundamental interest and concern is about the history of ideas, and especially American ideas. And the course that I did for the teaching company, sometimes known as the Great Courses, was a way of exploring the highways and the byways of American ideas and American thinking, which was something of a surprise for some people, because a lot of the times we don't really think that Americans have ideas. Sometimes people are a little dubious as to whether there is such a thing as an American mind. I don't mean that because Americans are not bright. They are. But the general image that we have of ourselves as Americans is that we are not thinkers. We don't sit around thinking great thoughts like Rodin's statue. We are doers. We are inventors. We are innovators. We are business people. We are people who are, we're damming up lakes. We're finding new ways to dig canals. We're building bridges and railroads. You just don't think of Americans as philosophers. Tinkerers, maybe. Inventors, certainly. Hands-on types, absolutely. But thinkers, that's just not the image we have of ourselves. And yet, Kim, I think that could not be more wrong.
I've thought a lot about this as well. Through this, starting this radio show and a lot of studies that I've done, the founding fathers were amazing thinkers. The idea to come up with this radical idea that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life and liberty and pursuit of happiness, we have taken that for granted in America, but that was a radical thought at the time.
It certainly was, and it's interesting to look at the background from which those ideas emerged. Up until, let us say, about the year 1680, almost all Western Europeans thought of the universe as a hierarchy, as a very structured affair. And at the top of this hierarchy, think of it like a pyramid. At the top of this hierarchy was the nobility, or actually the king. And then beneath the king, the dukes and the princes and the counts and the whatnot. And then there were the gentry, and then there were the peasants and commoners. And everybody was supposed to exist in a happy relationship with everybody else. Everyone was supposed to look out for everyone else. When the king went to war, the nobles went to war with him, and they recruited the peasants. And when the peasants were having a hard winter, the nobility were supposed to provide them with fuel and sustenance. Well, at least that was the theory. It didn't often work out terribly well in practice, but that was at least the theory, and everybody understood the world as being a place where everyone had a place, and you minded that place, because kings were born as kings, nobility were born as nobility, peasants and commoners were born as peasants and commoners, and nothing about that changed. If your father was a butcher, well, you were going to be a butcher too. If your father was a farmer, you were going to be a farmer. If your father was the king, you were going to be the king, one way or the other. There wasn't a whole lot of room for merchants and for commerce. Commerce, trade, that was regarded as vulgar. If you look at the plays of Shakespeare, for instance, when you have the main characters who are nobility, they're always speaking in blank verse, like Henry V. And when you come up to the commoners and the ordinary types, they're all speaking in prose. And that's a reflection of the value, the honor that was supposed to govern this hierarchy. And people who made a living out of trade and commerce, which said it was just simply supposed to be vulgar, you just really didn't want to talk about them or associate with them. All of that changes along about 1680. And it changes that way, first of all, because we come up with an entirely different way of looking at the universe, the physical universe itself. Up until that time, we regarded the physical universe the same way we regarded the social universe, as a hierarchy. There was the Earth at the bottom. There were the planets above the Earth. Then there were the stars, and then there were the heavens, and then was the Empyrean realm, and then there was God. But it was as much a structured hierarchy as the Kingdom of France. And then Galileo looks through a new instrument called the telescope, and he looks at the moon, and he makes an alarming discovery. When the physical universe was thought to be, well, a hierarchy, well, the moon was above the Earth, therefore the moon was supposed to be an improvement on the Earth, and the moon should be a nice round crystal ball. Galileo looked at the moon through his telescope, and it was not a perfectly round crystal ball. It had jagged mountains. It frankly looked awful. Well, how could that be in a universe organized hierarchically? And Galileo simply concluded, well, I guess it's not organized hierarchically. And he was seconded that way by Isaac Newton, who said, no, what organizes the physical universe is not a hierarchy. What organizes the physical universe is natural laws, physical laws like gravity. That's what makes things operate. That was a resounding revolution. I mean, not just in terms of science and math and all the formulae that go into Newton's Principia Mathematica. It just wiped out the whole notion of the physical universe as a hierarchy. Well, when it did that, that raised the question in people's minds, is the social hierarchy just as phony and irrational? That was when you had people doing political thinking on the same terms that they had done thinking about the physical universe. That was when you come up with John Locke. That's when you come up with the Baron Montesquieu. And those are the sources that are read by the American revolutionaries. And when we set out in our Declaration of Independence to declare that all men are created equal, what we're really saying is there's no hierarchy. Nobody is born booted and spurred and ready to ride somebody else in a saddle put on other people's backs. No, there's no hierarchy at all. Every human being is exactly equal in terms of being a human being and in the possession of certain natural rights, like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And those natural rights, those are, so to speak, the human equivalent of the natural laws that Newton laid down for the physical universe. What an intellectual background to build a new republic from. And they did this with a view towards saying, we're going to start over again. We're not going to build a society around the old hierarchies of kings and nobility and commoners. We're going to build an entirely new society around the real principles, the principles discovered by physical science, the principles discovered by social, political science. And they do. They start with a republic where all are created equal. And that's why we have, as part of our great seal, this motto, a new order in the ages. Of course, we do it in Latin because everybody did it in Latin in those days, but that's what it means. The United States was to be a new order in the ages because for the first time, we were going to set aside the irrationalities of hierarchy, and we were going to start over on the same basis that Galileo and Newton had started in physical science. And that is what lies behind the Declaration of Independence. That is what lies behind the Constitution that the framers devised in Philadelphia in 1787.
Dr. Gelzo, we have had those that have said that the American founders, these ideas are old, but actually they're very new. What is the old idea is the hierarchy, the elites, whether or not it is a king or a pharaoh or a dictator, the elites and then the peasants, that is the old idea. And we actually see different names, but that same movement right now in America of a hierarchy. And as you were talking about it, it just became very clear to me, Dr. Gelzo.
Well, hierarchy has this one thing to say in its favor. It feels comfortable. Hierarchy tells you that somebody is looking out for you. Someone is going to take care of you. Someone is going to give order to your life. And for many people who find life disorderly and sometimes incomprehensible, that's a message that comes with sweetness and reason adorning it. Now, this approach comes in a variety of forms. It can come in the form of the Bolshevik assurance, which is, let's overthrow everything and enthrone a rule that says, from everyone according to their ability, to everyone according to their need. The problem is, of course, that it winds up slaughtering tens of millions of people in order to try to achieve that without ever actually getting to the goal. Another alternative to this is the blue blood hierarchy, and that is the people who say, well, we were born to rule over you, so let us take care of you. And then there's the Otto von Bismarck version of hierarchy, which is to say, let's create a welfare state, and the state will take care of you. Or let's try the bureaucratic hierarchy, which says, let's create an incredible skein of regulations which will ensure that your life will be safe and happy and taken care of. Now, all of those alternatives to what was devised in Philadelphia in 1776 and 1787 like to say that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are old-fashioned. No, actually, they're not. They're not any more old-fashioned than gravity is old-fashioned. What's really old-fashioned is the Bolshevik or the Blue Blood or the bureaucratic or the Bismarckian way of offering hierarchy, because that takes us right back to the Middle Ages. Maybe not with, you know, kings and crowns on their heads, maybe not with serfs toiling in the fields, but with the same kind of relationship. Because as soon as you take away liberty, the liberty that is a natural right, you take away the essence of people's life itself. And what we have then as part of our heritage as Americans is really something which is not only revolutionary and continues to be revolutionary, but which continues to find new ways of applying itself and in new places all around the world. I don't think there's anything outdated or old-fashioned about that at all.
Dr. Gelzo, on that note, let's go to break. This is the Kim Munson Show, and I'm talking with Dr. Alan Gelzo. He's a professor at Princeton University. We'll be right back.
Jason McBride over at Presidential Wealth Management, you come up with some pretty amazing quotes and nuggets of wisdom. What's your nugget of wisdom for today?
Well, I wish I could claim to have come up with this one, but I didn't. This one came from the Cabot Market Letter, and this is a quote that says, buy when you're scared to death and sell when you're tickled to death. And I think that one makes an awful lot of sense, too. It's just another way of saying buy low, sell high. Emotionally, though, we tend to do exactly the opposite. And it's just human nature. When everything's going good, you get excited. Oh, that looks so good. Everybody's talking about it. And we tend to pile in after everything has become good. And it's very hard to buy cheap, because when things are cheap, usually the news is terrible. The world is coming to an end. Emotion comes into it. So I think this is a really good quote. Another one that kind of ties into this that maybe brings home the point too is, I heard this one, everybody wants to be a value investor until the opportunity actually presents itself. So sometimes you just have to do the opposite of what feels right in your gut and do what logically feels right. And buy things when they're cheap. It could be a difficult thing. You may not guess the bottom exactly right. But I guess at Kim, we've gone through a lot of fancy ways of buy low, sell high.
It still works for successful investing, that's for sure. So Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, the guys and gals over there can certainly help out. Take another look at what your economy looks like, your nest egg. And the phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason McBride, thanks so much. Love these nuggets of wisdom. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you, Kim.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Here we come a-caroling among the leaves so green. Here we come a-wandering so fair to be seen.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I wish each and every one of you a very Merry Christmas. Here it is. I can't believe that Christmas is just a few days away. On the line with me is Jen Hewlin. She is an entrepreneur. She is the owner of Water's Edge Winery right here in Centennial, Colorado. It's just west of University on the north side of Arapahoe, on the north side of South Glen, and it is the place to finish up your Christmas shopping, Jen Hewlin.
Hey, Kim. Hey, Steve. Merry Christmas to you guys. So good to talk to you again.
It certainly is. And for those last-minute gifts, people can still do something very special by purchasing some wine with a personal label on that. And people need to allow maybe a couple of hours to make that happen. Do they come in with a picture of what they want that label to be, or how does that work, Jen?
We pre-printed labels that we can add text to, really pretty Christmas designs. So if you just want something very simple, we can knock that out in 5 minutes. But if you have a picture of your dog and you want it there, you just need to come in and we're going to work together. You will email me that picture and then we'll go to work and get that label done for you. I also want to mention that Wine Club is also a really great gift. So when everything opens back up and we are rolling again and serving you indoors, even outdoors, because we still have a lot of Wine Club members that are coming by, picking up their bottles, doing wine tasting. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Or we do gift cards as well. So if you just are looking for a last-minute thank you to a teacher that's been taking care of your kids or a caregiver for your parents, this is a wonderful gift idea. They can come in and use it for food, for wine, to buy our little tchotchkes. We have wonderful little Christmas items that you can order. I also do wine gift baskets. So if anybody's looking for a last-minute gift, we can knock that out in less than a day for them and have that turnaround. They just need to call the winery. The number is 720-381-6663. We are still open out on the patio. We're serving food. Chef Dean, amazing chili that we've all been snacking on over the last couple days. And we've got a couple tents out there. We've got a couple fire pits. We're doing our best to keep you warm. If you need a night out with your girlfriend just to get out of the house, swing by and say hi. You can come in and browse the wine indoors, grab a cup of wine to go. You can do wine to go now. Or you can grab a bottle. So many different ideas. I just wanted to mention really quick, Christmas Eve, we're shifting our hours from 11 until 7. We will be closed on Christmas Day in observance of the holiday.
Okay. Well, and I'm thinking as you're talking about the fireplaces and all, Jen, this is like après-ski, except you don't have all the sore muscles from skiing all day, right?
That's right. You might from lifting all those heavy bags. It's hard on the lower back, but we're doing our best to keep you fed and happy during the holiday season. So swing by and say hi. We miss you all.
Okay.
Well, for sure. And again, Jen's number is 720-381-6663. That's 720-381-6663. Jen, you are a great partner of the show. You're a dear friend, and Merry, Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Steve. Both of you as well. You are in our hearts, and we look forward to doing business with you as we move into the new year. Hopefully, it'll be a better one.
For sure. And on the line with me is Dr. Alan Gelzo. He is a professor at Princeton University, and we are talking about the American mind. And he had done a course for the Great Courses on this as well. Dr. Gelzo, in the last segment, you mentioned something about this hierarchy, that there really was a disdain for merchants, people that did commerce. And as you were saying that, I thought, here the American founders, many of them were merchants. They were doing business. And I find that today there seems to be, quote unquote, a disdain for the merchant, for the capitalist, somebody that provides a product and trades value for value. And I thought there is a correlation going on in America today to what has been going on with these hierarchies for all of these years.
Well, contempt for the vulgar merchant, for the peddler of commerce, has a long, long history. You can pick up the traces of it in Plato. You can pick it up in Aristotle. You can pick it up in Thomas Aquinas. There's a real suspicion this way of people who make their living from trade. You even get a whiff of it in, bless her heart, Jane Austen. Some of Jane Austen's novels are not entirely complimentary about people who are, well, as they say, looking down their noses in trade. And yet, something remarkable happens in the 18th century. And that is, trade suddenly loses its dishonor and becomes something remarkable. And you find traces of this in France. You find still more of it in the Netherlands. And you find it again in England. You find it in someone like Samuel Johnson, the great dictionary maker, when Johnson speaks in praise of innovation. And when Johnson says that someone can hardly occupy themselves more innocently than in making money, it would have been almost impossible to have heard an elite, educated Englishman saying something like that a century before. And yet there is Johnson saying it in the 1750s. Something really important is changing in the way people regard commerce and trade and merchandising. And that's picked up in America, because in America we start off without a nobility. We're not saddled with that. The British North American colonies are founded by people who wanted to get away from that kind of hierarchy. And what do? When they come to the American shores, they have to start businesses that will enable them to make a living. And no one is a more remarkable exemplar of that than Benjamin Franklin. But Franklin is hardly the only one. Even if you look at great landowners, even they in America are landowners on a very small scale compared to their British counterparts. They're making their money off what they can sell. They're making the money off trade. So trade turns out to be not only common, but honorable for Americans. And there's a great story that occurs in the context of a siege at Yorktown at the end of the American Revolution. This is a combined effort of our French allies with the Continental Army. And as officers of the Continental Army mixed with officers of the French Army, an amusing moment occurred, because the American officers, who were all people who had come from offices, they'd been clerks, they'd been lawyers, they'd been merchants, they're mixing with the French officers, and very innocently they asked the French what trade they followed back at home in France. Now, the French, of course, just laughed themselves silly at this, because you couldn't become an officer in the King of France's army unless you had 16 quarterings on your heraldic shield. I mean, the idea that someone qualified to become an officer because they had certain abilities was laughed off the stage. You inherited your position. So when the American officers asked questions like that, the French thought that was the funniest thing they'd ever heard. Yeah, well, it remained funny only for a few more years in France when those very same aristocrats proved so totally unable to defend themselves. But in the American environment, that's always what we've prided ourselves on. And yet, it's never quite gotten away without criticism, without people looking down their nose. One famous British visitor to America in the 1830s complained that she could never hear an American utter a sentence without it containing the word dollar. But that was the British aristocrats' view of things. In America, it was very different. We honored that. Today, things have gotten a little bit more difficult. Today, there has been something of a souring, especially as we have developed bureaucratic elites of our own. And there are many people who regard themselves as being in a position that looks down on and is pessimistic about commerce and trade and merchandise, who in fact are tempted to blame many of our social problems on exactly our preoccupation with commerce and trade, when the truth is that the liberty to trade as you will, as Adam Smith put it, to barter and to truck as you have the opportunity and the inclination, we have got to a point where many of our elites look upon that as somehow dirtying your hands. And when we arrive at that, then what we're looking at is the slow seepage back of hierarchy into our national life. And I'm not really convinced that's a good thing.
I'm not convinced that's a good thing either. And so you're talking about hierarchy. And I remember over the last 20 to 30 years that nonprofit, working for a nonprofit, that had a altruistic, that had a positive view. It seemed that you were giving something. Whereas if you worked for a corporation or if you had your own business, that was not quite as caring. But then I ended up doing a lot of different volunteer work, and I started to served on the board in executive position, where I really started to take a look at the budget and the money. And I realized here I am working all day long, taking care of my family. And then because I'm American, it's an American, Americans give a lot. I was also volunteering my time to help. This was a charity for orphan children. And then I started to look at, and there was one other charity. I guess that's the one that I was really knew the finances on. Then I started to see that the top people were making six-figure salaries plus benefits plus pensions. And I realized that actually nonprofit, it was a business. They just didn't have to pay taxes. And then the next thing I realized is that regulations were coming in and stifling people that were trying to build their businesses. And if, in fact, you gave your talents away, there was no bureaucratic taxes or rules or regulations. But the minute you regulations and licenses, and I can probably seem like I'm talking in circles, but let's say that you wanted to, and you may remember the case about braiding hair. There was a woman that could braid hair, and government came in and said you had to have a license because she was receiving money for that. But if she would have just been braiding the hair of her friends, there would not have been a problem. I hope you're following me on this because you're creating a whole lot of different things of thoughts. So what's your comments on all that?
Well, I'm following that very clearly. What you're describing is what Deirdre McCloskey has called the bureaucratic deal, as opposed to, let's say, the bourgeois deal. And in the bureaucratic deal, bureaucrats step in, whether they're nonprofit or government, and they promise that they will take care of things, and they will do it on a very noble, altruistic basis. They will not make profit from any of this. They will instead lay out what, on the basis of their expertise, they understand is the right way to do things. There are two problems with the bureaucratic way of going at things. One is that no bureaucrat ever knows enough to anticipate every possible situation. I mean, bureaucrats can make rules. They can even make rules based upon expertise. But you can't make rules that anticipate every situation, and that's all the more the case in such a complicated, interdependent society and economy that we live in today. The idea that some kind of centralized authority that is going to lay down exactly what rules will govern everyone's interchanges with everyone else is an extraordinary fallacy built out of an extraordinary arrogance. So when you look at the way people take this particular attitude, what you're looking at are people who are paying themselves what seems to me an unearned compliment. But another way of looking at this, I think, emerges from what we saw over this past summer. We saw an unholy outbreak of rioting, of assault, of statue toppling in places like Portland and Seattle and in other locations across the country. It was very interesting to watch these events in real time, because as you watched the protest crowds in Seattle or in Portland, you realized after a very short while, you weren't looking at working class people. You weren't looking at people who were hungry and demanding a job and trying to support a family. No, actually, you were looking, in many cases, at professional people. You were looking at graduate students. Basically, what you were looking at was not the 1%, but the 2% down to the 10%, that 2% to 10% complaining that they couldn't get access to being the 1%. Protests and riots. And not only that, but if you crank it back several years to the Occupy movement, wandering around some of the Occupy camps, as I did in Washington and Philadelphia and New York, what really struck me was that the people in the Occupy camps were not working class people. To the contrary, what working class people want is to work. They want jobs so they can better themselves. The people in the Occupy camps were the people who wanted access to the 1%, and that was why they were criticizing the 1%, because they were in the 2 to 10%, and they weren't happy there. What they wanted was status. When you start talking status, you're back to talking hierarchy. And what we see all around us today really is the rebirth of a lot of energy on the part of people in that 2 to 10% category who would really love to live in a hierarchical universe where they, in fact, get to occupy a superior position to everyone else. That's just not the way the American experiment has functioned. The American experiment has always been incredibly fluid, incredibly mobile. The motto has always been shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. And I have seen that played out over and over and over again. It's that mobility which gave us a Benjamin Franklin. It's that mobility which gave us a George Washington. It's that mobility which gave us an Abraham Lincoln. And that mobility, in many ways, has been the story of my life as well. I would bet it's been the story of yours, too.
Most definitely. Dr. Alan Gelzo, we will go to break, and I will tell you just a little bit of my story. This is Kim Munson. We're talking with Dr. Alan Gelzo. He is a professor, Princeton University. And before we go to break, though, one of my great partners is Castlegate Knife and Tool. Great place to finish up your Christmas shopping. They have knives from some of the best blade makers from throughout the world. And there's knives for collectors, sportsmen, great kitchen knife sets. And then they also have added in a beautiful collection of watches as well. So go to castlegate.com for more information.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
God rest ye merry gentlemen. Let nothing you dismay.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. On the line with me is Dr. Alan Gelzo. The conversations with him are always, they're just golden. And he is the Senior Research Scholar, the Council of the Humanities Director, Initiative on Politics and Statesmanship, at the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. Dr. Gelzo, I had to take a breath to get all that out.
it does take a deep breath, but it's good for the lungs.
That is for sure. Before we went to break, you were talking about the American idea and opportunity. You mentioned Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln. My story is my grandmother grew up in a two-room sod house on the plains in western Kansas. And yet here it is just two generations later, her daughter or her granddaughter has all kinds of opportunities at my feet. And it is this American mind, this American idea. And I feel that it's under assault right now, Dr. Alan Gelzo. We have work to do to preserve it and to teach it to our children. And I know that's what you're doing at Princeton University.
Well, it's been under assault before. And one era in which it was under assault was the era before the Civil War. I'd like to take you back to Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass was born a slave in Maryland, probably in the year 1818. He himself had some difficulty establishing exactly what his birth date had been. He learned early on what slavery was, and that was the manipulation of people by the powerful to extract labor, work, and value. And he learned to resent that. He got access to books which explained things to him, and he ran away. He successfully escaped from slavery. He made it to Wilmington, Delaware, to Philadelphia, to New York, and then eventually to New Bedford, Massachusetts. And he becomes a favorite among anti-slavery orators because he has such marvelous natural talent as a speaker. And he becomes one of the really great men of 19th century America in his life after the Civil War. As 200 times was a lecture called Self-Made Men. And in it, Frederick Douglass, and remember, here is a man who was born as a slave. He speaks of America as preeminently the country of self-made men. That there is no natural aristocracy. There is no natural barrier. You can make of yourself by your own energies what you will. Now, he escaped from an environment in slavery that said the exact opposite. The environment in slavery said, here in our plantations, we have nice little communities. That was the word John C. Calhoun used to defend the slave plantation. We have nice little communities, and in our nice little communities, everybody is in their place. Now, the place, of course, is always determined by race, which among all the irrational factors you could probably find to define people with is probably the most irrational. But, Calhoun said, we create a community where white people look out for their black slaves, and black slaves are taken care of by their white masters, and everyone is happy, and we don't have labor trouble, and we don't have labor strife. Douglas ran away from that because he knew, yes, there really was labor trouble. There was labor strife. If you wanted to see the evidence of it, all you had to do was ask a slave to roll up their shirt, and you could see the whip marks on their backs. Oh, yeah, there was labor problems aplenty. But in the world of the slave plantation hierarchy, that wasn't supposed to exist. Douglas escaped from that, testified against it, and helped to bring it down. But many Americans, slave-owning Americans in the South, who thought the way to go is to rebuild hierarchy, and to rebuild hierarchy on the basis of race and oppression and slavery. It took us a civil war and 750,000 lives to extinguish that. We paid a high price for it in the past, but we paid that price and we went on from there. When I hear voices today that want to talk about hierarchy, whether it's the hierarchy or bureaucracy or the hierarchy of slave law, and Lovejoy was a friend of Lincoln's, Lovejoy said on the floor of Congress, if any fugitive comes to my door, I want them to know that I live in Princeton, Illinois. I live 3 miles from the center of a town. You may come to my door and I will provide you refuge and I will help you on your way to freedom. And Lovejoy didn't care who tried to track him down or interfere with him that way. That's what I want to say. I want to say, I am with Frederick Douglass. I am with Harriet Tubman. I'm with everyone who put the leverage to the overthrow of Southern plantation hierarchy. And I do not want to see the reestablishment of other kinds of hierarchy today in our national life. And that, I think, is what we have to be concerned about the most. Let us go back to Franklin, to Washington, to Lincoln, to Douglas, to Harriet Tubman. When we do, then we'll find the real springs of the fountain of liberty's blessings. And then we can all live under our vine and under our fig tree, because liberty is what leads to real life.
We have just a couple of minutes, Dr. Alan Gelzo. I feel that liberty is under assault right now in America. However, I also take a lot of heart. I think people are waking up to realize that we have this risk. What is your final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners this Christmas week?
My final thought is be confident in liberty, because unlike hierarchy, hierarchy is unnatural. It is irrational. Liberty is a natural right that everyone is born with and in equal quantities. And everyone yearns for that liberty. Some realize that in themselves more than others. Some are braver or sometimes cleverer in manifesting it. But liberty will always spring, no matter how much we try to dump the manure of hierarchy on it. The plant of liberty will always spring again. Jefferson said that the two great natural rights, life and liberty, were born together. He said the God who gave us life gave us liberty at the same time. The hand of force, said Jefferson, can destroy them, but it cannot dissever them. And I think that is as true today and will be as true in our future as it was when Jefferson wrote that on the eve of the American Revolution.
I tell you, Dr. Alan Gelzo, I have gotten chills on several of the things that you've said today. They just are resounding. I so appreciate you joining this. I wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous 2021.
And you too, Kim, and all of your listeners.
Thank you. And our quote for today is from Frederick Douglass. He said, if there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. This struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, or it may be both moral and physical. but it must be a struggle. My friends, today be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America, and Merry Christmas. And I don't want no one to cry.